Today on Sticks End, we are all about the Elite Eight preview. We have a myriad of college games to look at, and we aren't just talking D1 today, folks. We got the NLL Finals getting underway Friday, Saturday, to see if Albany or Buffalo will come away the league champion there. Buffalo looking to defend the crown against one of the best underdog stories of the year in lacrosse, the Albany Firewolves. We'll talk that. We'll talk D1. We'll get D2 in there. We'll get D3 in there. It is a massive lacrosse weekend. Quarterfinals, semifinals if you're a D2 person. Let's get it all going. Let's do it. Welcome back to the Sticks End podcast. My name is Dan Arestia. I am glad you're here. It's too big of a lacrosse weekend to waste any time with the pleasantries and the hey, how are you? Let's just get to it. NLL Finals. We'll start with that. We'll start with the pros. As the great Mike Francesa says, the league where they play for pay. Finals underway today on Friday night, game one in Albany, who is the higher seed and will host the first game of the series. Game two in Bandit Land on Saturday. I believe I have that right. I believe it's Saturday. The Firewolves, I mean, if you're an Albany fan, you need to get that game one, guys, because the Bandits have already announced that game two is sold out. So they've filled the KeyBank Center to nobody's surprise. It'll be 19,000 crazy Buffalo fans breaking tables and screaming their heads off. And the only thing separating them from you, Firewolves, is some plexiglass. So good luck with that. Need to get that game won. The matchup itself, you know, Buffalo is the favorite to win the series out there with the guys in Vegas. They are 1.5 goal favorite in game one on the road. I think it's at plus money, though. Josh Byrne just won Offensive Player of the Year, which is a new award that the NLL has, which makes sense. Offensive Player of the Year and MVP in leagues, it tends to be a way, the MVP and the offensive player of the league, it's a way to honor the guy who's quite literally the best offensive player in the league. But when you only have the MVP, it kind of just becomes the de facto offensive player of the year award. So by doing this, it opens up possibilities for the MVP award where it's a little bit, I don't want to say it's easier, but the pool of people who you can expect to win it gets bigger. You know, we saw Christian DelBianco win an MVP. You've seen goalies win the MVP, and guys like, you know, transition kind of players could be in the mix. It's not just going to be the old sort by points. The guy at the top of the list is the MVP. You can mix it up a little bit and find ways to honor the offensive stars with the offensive player of the year. That said, Josh Byrne can very well be the MVP as well. He's a finalist for that too. He and Dane Smith, his teammate, are finalists. The two of them have been more than basically anybody in the league can handle all year. The production from them is the kind of thing that's, you know, at this point it's for the history books more than anything. I think that's going to be, you know, a key to the matchup, obviously, is what can Albany do to handle the Buffalo offense led by those two guys. I think it's going to start with Albany being good at net. Doug Jamison was a finalist for Goalie of the Year. That award was announced to go to Nick Rose today, but Dougie was a worthwhile finalist for that award. And he's going to be, I think, the key here. He's going to see plenty of rubber. There's not a whole lot of shots that Buffalo cannot create. They create them out of thin air with creativity from guys like Frazier and Tohoka and obviously Byrne as well. It's tough to think of like the defensive scheme that's going to frustrate Buffalo. I don't know if there really is one out there. I feel like when Buffalo struggled earlier in the year, if they got off to a slow start or they were kind of, you know, having trouble kind of getting in a rhythm, more than defenses stopping them, it was that their faceoff situation was not great. They did not have as much of the ball as they were used to having with Adler out there. And that, look, since they added Connor Farrell, the wins and losses go through the roof. The production goes through the roof. They're having the ball as much as they're used to having it. And that's an impact. That said, the faceoff spot, I don't know if they'll be able to rely on Farrell to handily win possession because the guy on the other side of that matchup is Joe Nardella. And Joe is obviously one of the best in the world. He's a guy who's had Farrell's number in the past, as I look at stats, you know, just kind of from the outdoor game. So who gets kind of those extra possessions there, I think, will matter. And then with Albany, like, it's such a fun... They were a three-win team a year ago. Nobody thought they would be all that much better this year. Maybe a little bit better as the young guys get in there. You know, they had the number one pick. They take Dyson Williams, who hasn't played in the NLL yet because he's finishing his college career. So their number one overall pick isn't with the team, and they still had this season. It's on the backs, again, of their young stars, of Simmons, of Kurtz, you know, Ethan Walker, Longboat. Like, the roster has been exceptional. They make the move for Wagner on the defensive end at the deadline to bolster that end and send a sign that they really think they can do it. And here they are in the finals, really looking like maybe they can do it. The adage has always been that, you know, if you have a really young team, like, come the playoffs and all sports, experience matters so much. It really does, to manage those moments of emotions and dealing with kind of the roller coaster ride that happens. It doesn't matter if it's college sports, pro sports. If you have guys who have done it before and been through it before, they know what it's like and they know the pressures of those moments and how to get through them. Albany is not an experienced team by any measure. Again, their stars are all these young guys, or guys like Simmons, who's probably going to win Rookie of the Year. Kurtz, you know, a Rookie of the Year kind of guy. Ethan Walker is very early in his career. But none of that has mattered to this point. Like, I keep waiting for the kids to play like kids, and they just don't. They just don't. I think there, obviously the coach has done a great job there. Glenn Clark's done a great job there. He was awarded, you know, coach of the year, as he should be, and all that stuff. He has earned it. I think if you're just a neutral fan, you probably got to be pulling for Albany here, just because, like, the underdog story is so fun in sports, and this would be an all-timer. I have not gone back to look at the preseason odds for the title, but man, if you had a ticket with Albany on it, you're probably going to cash yourself quite the payday if they actually win this thing. So Albany and Buffalo get going tonight. I will absolutely be finding some time for that, looking for that a little bit as I come back from the Prep Nationals High School event that's here in Connecticut, but that game's going to be a doozy. The finals themselves are going to be great. Game two at a minimum. I mean, whether it's a clinching game for Buffalo or it's, you know, a stay alive game for Buffalo, it's going to be in front of 19,000 people in the best environment in pro lacrosse, Banditland. There's nothing like it. So that is a must-see event on Saturday night. I'm 100% sure, 99% sure it's Saturday night, but that's a must-see game. All right, that's the pros. Let's get into the college ball. The amateurs. These guys aren't pros. Student athletes, and not the other way around. Students first, battling to play in front of 40,000 people in an NFL stadium. Purely about the kids. Nothing pro about this at all. Let's start with the Saturday games. First up, Notre Dame and Georgetown. Irish are a 4.5 goal favorite here. This is the first part of a doubleheader for the day that's being played out at Shewhart Stadium. That's out at Hofstra on Long Island. I will be heading out to enjoy the day in Hempstead. Forecast, I think it's looking maybe okay, maybe a little cloudy. I'm hoping we don't get bad weather, but it looks like it'll be nice and warm at least. Notre Dame has not lost since they played, would you look at that, Georgetown. De Hoyas won the regular season meeting on the road, mind you. Georgetown was on the road in that game, and they won that game in overtime. That is Notre Dame's only loss of the year. Is that enough to sow just a little bit of doubt? Maybe a little bit of doubt. Maybe doubt's not the right word. Maybe a little curiosity, a little wonder into the minds of lacrosse fans who have watched the Irish just roll through college since. There have been moments in the last 6 weeks or so, I'd say, where Notre Dame lacrosse is on, and I'm not just doing this as a homer, they look like UConn basketball from this year, where you watch them play and you wonder not who's going to beat this team, you wonder who's going to give them a game, who's going to at least compete. I think this matchup is the one you look at as somebody who can compete, man, can put a scare in them, can win this game. Georgetown gets to play this game with a confidence that nobody else in the country can have. They get to walk on the field against Notre Dame. and they get to say, we already beat this team. They don't have to wonder if they can do it. They know they can do it. It's proven. It already happened this year. There's a ton of good individual matchups in this game. Ty Banks, Pat Cavanaugh, where you have the future star versus a Tuareg and finalist and you know, top draft pick. You have, you know, shooters like Graham Bundy against a goalie like Liam Enemann, so pro weapons against, again, a Tuareg and finalist. A few things I take away from the first game that I think I'm going to look for here. I think the quick start for Georgetown is a key. If you waste possessions, you take bad shots, Enemann is going to eat him up, he's going to get in a rhythm, and then he will wreck the entire game. You will not score goals. You can't win if you let him really feel it early. In the first meeting, Georgetown out to a 3-1 first quarter lead. They also forced three failed clears from the Irish in that first quarter. Allowed them to keep the offensive pressure up, keep the ball at that end, and build that 3-1 lead and then just kind of, you know, play from in front a little bit, play with that pressure against Notre Dame, that Notre Dame does not have a lot of time playing from behind this year. Next, everybody knows the Notre Dame offense is deep. Obviously, the Cavanaughs are key, so this is going to sound kind of brain dead as I say it, but you need to keep Pat Cavanaugh off the score sheet. And the reason I say that is in the first game, in the Georgetown win, neither Pat nor Chris Cavanaugh registered a point until the fourth quarter. The damage came from the midfield, which maybe you just got to live with, but you just have to make sure that attack, the Cavanaughs aren't the ones that bury you. You have to try and limit them for as long as you can. And I think, finally, I think the penalties, you need to see those stay low for both teams. You know, these are the games that get won in the margins in these tense moments in the postseason. So in the first game, Notre Dame had three man-up goals. The Hoyas had two. A lot of those came late at some penalties that were in, like, you know, the second half of that game. Both these extra man crews can be deadly. So if you give them an easy one, they're going to take it. I think Georgetown is playing this game ready to play another tight game. Both their Big East tournament games, wins and OT. The battle with Penn State was you know, pretty close. I'd say for just about most of the game through, Georgetown ends up winning by three goals. Notre Dame took care of business against Albany, but the result wasn't overwhelming by any measure. This is a game where I'm going to get nuts, man. I'm going to take the Hoyas. Notre Dame might win this game, but 4.5 goals is just too much for me. I'm taking Georgetown here, saying we got a close one. So give me the Hoyas to make some magic happen in Hempstead. Second game on Saturday is Duke and Maryland. No rematch here. This is their first meeting of the year. Hardly their first meeting ever, but first meeting of the year. Maryland is a 3.5 goal underdog in this one. I will say these are from the lines that I think I still have these from earlier in the week. So if these sound out of whack, it's because they're now probably a couple days old and might have moved some. But I see Maryland as a 3.5 goal dog. This is the second half of that doubleheader out at Hofstra. The Terps, look, man, they played a solid ACC slate this year, and that's a nice sight for those of us who are old enough to remember that Maryland was in the ACC and had some bangers over the years. So the Terps lost to the Irish by 5, lost to UVA by 4. Their other ACC game was the OT win against Cuse in the Dome. That OT winner, I believe, was all the way back in like mid-February, so, you know, the most recent of those games is the Virginia game, which is, I think, at this point now, like 2 months ago. So a lot can happen in 2 months. The opening round performance for Maryland shook me. I'll be honest. I'm going to own it. I owned it on the internet, which is as bold a place as you can own it. But I had this team pegged as, we're going to slow it down. We're going to grind it out. We're going to have a rock fight, play for low-scoring games. So what happens? Of course, Tillman just gets 16 goals out of his team against Princeton, a team that's been cooking lately. Three players for Maryland in that game with at least a hat trick, 9 players with a point. All your knowns really had excellent shooting days with the exception of Irksa, who didn't even register a point. And they still scored 16 goals. I thought Spanos was a man possessed in that game. I thought he was dominant as a Dodger and a party starting kind of player for that offense. This felt like chess match kind of stuff. And I'm not talking specifically about Maryland-Princeton, but like the Maryland playing the big picture here. Maryland spends most of the year slow, figuring it out. Irksa got hurt towards the end of the year. You know, they're going to have to play slow because who knows if Irksa's at 100%. They got to lean on the defense. You think the jab is coming, and Tillman hits you with the uppercut. Before you know it, you're on the mat. It's just that kind of thing happening with the Terps right now. So what does Duke prepare for? Spanos, Molliver, Corus, Urxa, all out there looking good, trying to attack? Are they preparing for the slowdown Maryland game, which we've seen them happily play and contend with teams in? I think Duke would probably rather play the faster game. I'm certain the talk will be about Ajax and Brennan in terms of individual matchups. I'm sure we'll see, you know, the usual slew of posts about the matchup with all caps and eyes emojis and all that kind of stuff. Lots of words on the broadcast because they're top three draft picks, Brennan first overall, all that stuff. Honestly, I think the tempo part of this game is the massive part of the game. And I think the two guys who can control the tempo the most are not Ajax and Brennan. It's Luke Wierman and Jake Naso. Wierman cooked Princeton last week. Naso was efficient. He was like 60% against Utah. Who gets the better of that matchup gets to set the tone and the tempo for the game. If Maryland can not just go make it, take it, but if they do something that's better than make it, take it, which is like 70-second possession, goal. Wierman wins the faceoff. 60-second possession, goal. Just eating up the game and death by a thousand cuts. That's the kind of game that I like Maryland in. Duke can go end-to-end. They have middies like McGuire who will kill you going D to O. Carpenter will kill you going D to O. Faceoffs can help take that away to an extent because it shortens the amount of transition space that they have, and you can try and just, you know, beat them in the sub game to handle the other stuff. I think I'm looking at faceoffs as a key part of this game. I'm kind of looking at how the Terps handle Zawada as a really critical piece too. Zawada is the distributor. He's the guy who throws that lethal pass through a defense that's unsettled or isn't ready, you know, a defense that's maybe just dealing with a McAdory dodge or an O'Neal dodge, and then the ball moves forward to Zawada, he'll carve you up. I think that matchup is key for the Maryland defense. Yes, look, the heavyweight fight, the Ajax-Brennan fight, is going to be great. I'm sure Brennan will do some unbelievable things. Ajax will do some unbelievable things. Both those guys are probably going to win a season-ending award for their position. I wouldn't be shocked. But the team scheme here is the huge thing in this one. I'm inclined to take Duke. I think they have the tools to overcome the Terps' best shot. I think they shot very well against Utah. I think carrying the momentum from that game against McNaney is important. 3.5 goals is a lot for this kind of game, but I'm going to take Duke here. I'm going to take Duke to win and to cover the 3.5 in front of Coach Donowski's home fans out there on Long Island. And then after that game, we have, what's that? You thought there were only two games Saturday? Expand your minds, folks. Broaden your horizons. There is madness happening in D2 and D3. Let's spend some time on it. The other Saturday games we got Tufts and St. John Bisher. This is the last game of the D3 games on Saturday, I think, but I'm starting with it. D3 has been nuts. And the team that is the personification of the May Madness is St. John Fisher. They were unranked basically the whole year. You know, Devitt and I do the USA Lacrosse Mag rankings. I don't think we even had them and also considered more than maybe once. Maybe once. They have now beaten the NESCAC champ in Wesleyan, and they knocked off the Liberty League heavyweight that is St. Lawrence. Both of those teams were top 10 at some point this year. St. Lawrence spent basically the entire year top 10. And now St. John Fisher beat them both, and they're in the Elite Eight. It is the Cinderella story in men's lacrosse right now. I don't think anything else is close. St. John Fisher, look, they play some zone. They have some kind of quirky looks to their defense and their offense, and it makes them – they play a kind of lacrosse that can be very hard to prepare for because there aren't many other teams playing the way they do, the way they play defense. At this time of year, it's basically just one-game seasons every weekend. It's the kind of thing that can frustrate an opponent, and if you don't handle those kind of zone looks well, if you don't have a way to prepare for them, and you don't come in with a game plan that works, it's going to stifle you, and it's going to keep the game close, and St. John Fisher might be able to score the goal that's big at the end. That's how they've won these games so far. They've just kept it close and kept it a battle and hung around, and the other team can't solve what they're doing with the zone. Tufts is, of course, a powerhouse. Look, they've had a few games this year where they did not look like the usual juggernaut. They were the top seed in the NESCAC tournament. They lost to the 8 seed. Lost to Hamilton. They got the loss to RIT. They got a loss to Wesleyan. I think the key to pulling off a Tufts win, to pulling off a win against Tufts, I should say, is, and this is, I think, how it's been for the last few years, as good as they've been, but you have to jump on them early. You have to get out to a good start. You have to play with confidence, and you have to get those first two, three goals of the game. If they get out to that kind of start, if they go face-off, first possession, goal, face-off win, you know, goal, and they're feeling it, somebody hits a BTB or something, once those plays start happening and they start playing like superheroes, it's over for you. You can't give them the opportunity to start that snowball down the hill. You have to jump on them early and just trip them up out of the gate. If you can't, it's got to be hard. But if you can create that little bit of doubt early, if you can hang with them early, even take a goal lead early, that kind of thing, you can create the doubt and you can just try and stay with them. And that's been the St. John Fisher game plan so far. There are no odds out there for a game like this. If there were, St. John Fisher would be a massive underdog. On paper, this is a Tufts blowout. On paper, St. John Fisher's last two games should have been blowouts with them on the losing end. And that's why I don't play the game on paper. Even if you barely watch a minute of D3, you should try and find a few minutes and check in on this one. It's the biggest underdog story, as I said, in college ball right now. So it's worth a few minutes of your time. Next D3 game on Saturday is Bowdoin, Middlebury. Two more NESCACs here, so we got three NESCACs in the tournament. Still remaining in the Elite Eight. What a year for the NESCAC. Middlebury got through Dickinson to make it here. Bowdoin ended the magical season of RPI. RPI really did have a great year. I think they got up to number two in the country. They were not a team I expected to be that good, but man, did they have a hell of a season. So Bowdoin was able to get the better of them in the round of 16. Bowdoin's going to have the best player on the field in this game. They're going to have Will Byrne, who's a player of the year candidate. He's at a 50-50 season right now. There aren't too many guys in any division who are at the 50-goal and 50-assist mark. I believe there's one other guy. Max Esposito over at Concordia, Wisconsin, has, I think, a 60-60 season. But outside of these two, that's it. These teams have met twice this year. They split the meetings. The score wasn't close either time. So kind of hard to pull anything meaningful from those, right? Bowdoin beat up Middlebury once. Middlebury beat up Bowdoin once. Bowdoin's individual personnel is better than Middlebury's. Byrne, Ethan Barnard are facing off. They have, for my money, Bowdoin has the best short stick, D. Mitty and D3 and Zach Gorno. It's an awesome roster. And I think this, they've been kicking on the door for a while, I think. I feel like Bowdoin's been building toward this. And the way this bracket is shaking out, a trip to championship weekend, I think, could finally be in the cards for them. Middlebury's been pretty up and down this year. They've had some really incredible individual performances of late. But, you know, they were like in the top 20 with a big win. Then they'd lose to somebody who was kind of medium and drop out. And then they'd go in with a big win and lose to somebody and kind of drop back out. And they couldn't string together these performances that really let you know, yeah, we belong there with the best of the best in D3. And I don't totally believe in Middlebury for this game. They've been hot lately, but they've been hot during the season before and had a hard time staying there. So I'm going to go with Bowdoin in this game to take down the Panthers and head a little bit closer to the D3. They'll be in the D3 Final Four with a win. Head a little bit closer to championship weekend. Next D3 game is the Salisbury and Washington and Lee game. Salisbury, of course, I think at this point has to be a heavy favorite against basically everybody. I think if the PLL draft wasn't as offense heavy, like if it was last year's draft where everybody was talking about how good the polls were, I think guys like Jude Brown and Jack Dowd, these are guys who might have been drafted or at least been post-draft ads. They really, I think they have pros on the Salisbury team. The Gulls are undefeated. They're 21-0. Their closest game this year, I think, is a 5-goal win over Lynchburg. That was back in early March. I think that's the closest game they've played. They've played a game that was decided by 6 goals or fewer, I think twice this season, or twice since in the last like month or two. You know, you get what I'm saying here. They're all American good at every spot. WNL beat a really good Lynchburg team in the round of 16. They have some serious talent. I said it on social today. Alex Brown is at a preposterous 70 goals on the year and 3 assists. It's an all-timer of a goal scorer stat line. I think WNO has a potential game breaker here in Tyler Spano, one of the best faceoff specialists in D3. I think any chance WNL has at an upset starts with him getting the better of Blake Mahlampfy all day. I can't go against the streak. Dowd, Brown, Bryce Bromwell. There's too many high-level D1 guys who just happen to be wearing a Salisbury uniform. John DeFazio could be like, I think he's a pro-level LSM. Like it's just, they're so good. I'm going to take the goals here to get back to championship weekend again. So I think they win here. I don't know who's beating this team. RIT and Christopher Newport is the last D3 game of the day. That's on Saturday. If you're a fan of lacrosse in general, you owe it to yourself, I think, to check these games out, these D3 games. It's been the best of the tournaments by far. The games have been awesome. There's been upsets. There's been early round heavyweight matchups. It's been really good. The NCAA site has free streams for these games for the most part. Really should try and check them out. Anyway, last D3 game, it's such a good slate. Christopher Newport is going to be the underdog here. They play a heavyweight schedule, but I don't look at Christopher Newport's season and see that one really big-time win. They played Salisbury twice, both losses. Played Tufts, basically blown out. Played St. Lawrence, lost by a goal. Their best wins are like Dickinson, Lynchburg, Stevens, WNL. Good, not great kind of teams to me. That said, CNU has Andrew Cook. He's the best middie in D3 for me. He is now on a PLL roster. He is a pro. He's on the Atlas. They picked him up. That's how good he is. He's pushing 100 points from the midfield on the season. There's a few more potent weapons than him out there. I would say Kobe Auslander is one of my favorite players in D3. He's a throwback, do-it-all middie type. I love those kind of players, so I'm a fan of his. A question for this game, I think, is going to be the availability of Mike Grace. If he's full go, he's a game wrecker. His matchup with Andrew Cook would be a battle of pro-level guys in a D3 game. And I mean, how could you not love that? It's like Godzilla versus Kong out there as all the little citizens of the city look on, terrified of what might happen to them. RIT's attack, I think, is where this game gets decided. Luke Pilcher, Cliff Gaston, Jake Erickson, they are all at least 84 points. The trio has over 270 points combined. Across the attack, they are averaging 90 points a guy. Nobody has stopped them all year. Newport's Ryan Young, really, really good defenseman. He's good enough to maybe take away one of them, but the other two, how you handle them is where the game gets decided for me. I'm going to take RIT here. Just too many weapons. Just too many, particularly at attack, just too many weapons. If CNU starts fast, maybe they have a shot, but, you know, people haven't really been able to jump on RIT all that much. I think if RIT starts rolling, kind of like Tufts, then they have this multi-headed face-off monster. They could run away with it. So I'm going to take RIT in that game. Okay, now we can go to Sunday. Now there are no more Saturday games. First Sunday game, Syracuse and Denver. Down in Baltimore. I guess it's just how the seeding works, but having Q's make the trip to Baltimore kind of stinks, right? Like, and this is purely anecdotal. I have not looked this up. I have no idea if this is true. This is just me going on gut and vibes, which never leads me to a good place, but it feels like they're never in the tri-state area for these games. It feels like their quarterfinal game is always somewhere like Baltimore. I don't know. Anyway, Q's opened up as a 2.5 goal favorite in this game. They beat Towson 20-15 in the round of 16. A game that was probably a wider margin than the final score indicates. Syracuse very much took their foot off the gas late. This is a major opportunity for the Orange. Get the championship weekend would be huge. There's some inexperience on the roster, but I think it's well balanced with portal guys like Jake Stevens, Sammy English, who have been here before, who have been in this game before. Something I'm going to be watching closely, I think, for Q's in the early going is the play of Willmark. Willmark has been over 50% in net once in the last 5 games. I think showing up to this game with a cold goalie against the Denver Shooters is would make me a little bit nervous. That's all I'm saying. Denver has some weapons that can shoot the hell out of the ball. Guys like Richie Connell, Noah Manning, they can punish you. You have to stretch too far to deal with them. Cody Mulawski is going to feast on the inside. On top of all that, you need to be ready to slide and support the matchup with J.J. Silstrom. And to me, that's critical for the Q's defense. If Billy Dwan can handle the J.J. Silstrom matchup without a slide, without help, you can leave him on an island. If he can take him away from behind the goal, the Q's defense gets to stay a little bit closer to everybody else, right? You don't have to cheat away from Mulawski inside because you're not going to have to slide. You don't have to go further down into the middle to help with the slide package and make your closeout to the Shooters longer because nobody's going to have to slide. Dwan's winning the matchup. If Silstrop can win consistently, the Q's defensive scheme might have to change a little bit. You got to protect the middle a little more. You got to be ready to support a little more. And that just changes everything. So Denver jumped all over Michigan last week, shut out of a cannon, built that huge lead. I think Michigan clawed their way back into that game. And I think it's a little worrisome for Denver that that happened. If Denver can get out to the quick start again against, you know, if Will Mark stays cold, it'll be huge. But if they leave an opening like they did against Michigan, this Q's team will roar back and is good enough to erase a deficit. They'll score a boatload. I'm going to be on the orange here. I think I'm going to be on the orange, particularly if faceoffs go their way. Cohn and Stathakis will be good. Johnny Mullen, I'm sure we'll get plenty of draws too. You know, they'll go with the hot hand against Stathakis. But I think if Q's can win the faceoff game, then I like Q's a lot more. So I'm going to go with the orange here to make it to championship weekend. Next, we got the Hop, Johns Hopkins, and UVA. Obviously, you know, look, you hear me saying these games, it's blue buds all around this weekend. I don't know if there's a bluer, blooder game than this one. Hopkins is a two-goal favorite as of the moment. I looked it up. Again, it may have moved. This is from earlier in the week when I wrote these down. That's exactly the margin Hopkins won the regular season meeting by. They won by two. Schellenberger did feast in that game, had 6 points. I'll say here what I continue to say about Hopkins and their matchups. I think the Jays can win the game through the midfield. I am not sold on the UVA midfield at either end. I don't think that's a hot take at all. I think that's a take a lot of people have at this point. But I look at guys like Matt Collison, Peshko. They should have a significant advantage, just even from a physicality point of view. Collison had 4 goals in the first meeting against UVA. I think UVA short-sticked him like the entire day, and he just made them pay over and over again. Maybe that changes this week. Maybe he sees Ben Ware. Maybe he sees some LSMs. But if they go out there and they try and short Collison again, if I'm Hop, I'm just saying thank you and taking 4 more goals from him. You know? Hop offense runs deep enough that UVA will have to pick their poison in the Hopkins midfield. I don't think there's a place where they... UVA midfield runs deep enough to be able to match them. I think down low, I like the UVA pulls against the Hopkins attack. I like Schroeder and Kastner and that crew better than the Hopkins attack. In the midfield, I think Hopkins has a big edge. Literally, a very large human edge. On the other end of the field, Schellenberger, like we said, is a key. 6 points in the first meeting. I think you look at this UVA offense right now, and it's very fair to say they will go as far as Connor Schellenberger can take them. It has to be him. I think the midfield for UVA on the offensive end, too, has been very underwhelming. Schutz had a hat trick against Hopkins in the first game. I think UVA is going to need at least that from him in this one. He's going to have to carry the load. At this time of year, to me, it's really hard to win games if you're getting nothing from the midfield. I don't know how you do it. Cormier started the postseason with a nice love letter to PLL coaches who didn't draft him to the tune of an 8-goal outing. And if that torch is still lit, maybe it's a problem. But look, if you're Hopkins, I think you could live with a game where UVA scores 11 goals and Cormier and UVA and Schellenberger do all the point scoring and they get nothing from their midfield. That's a game that Hopkins wins, I think. So I don't know if UVA has the horses to take this game. I think Shelley and Cormier can pile up the points. But the depth of weapons, particularly in the midfield for me, of UVA, I am not convinced. And in May, I think that really hurts you. So I'm going to be on Hopkins in this game. I will take the Blue Jays, get the championship weekend. Sorry, folks, not going to be an all-ACC weekend. And, oh, hell yeah, there's more again. D2 semis coming at you on Sunday. Trip to Philly on the line in these games. Like, find time to watch. They're so good. Find time to watch these games. Adelphi and St. Anselm, there's no line, of course, for the D2 games. I'd consider Adelphi to be a pretty good favorite here. Maybe not a huge favorite. These teams played twice this year, once in the regular season, once in any 10 play. And Adelphi won both, but both times it was a one-goal game. I really like the St. A's talent. I think the Larson boys have been great this year. I think they have one of the best defenders in the country in Ryan Slattery. Adelphi just runs so deep. There's three different 50-point scorers. They have a million guys from Massapequa. It's like a blue-collar Long Island all-star team out there. I think Logan Tucker and Eamon Hall are monsters. I think it's just really hard to match up with this Adelphi offense because there's so many guys out there who can hurt you, who can be versatile and move between midfield and attack. I also give Adelphi a big advantage in the net. I think Dylan Renner has played like the best goalie around this year. So I'm going to go with Adelphi in this game to get to championship weekend. And the other game, the other semi, the semi in the South, Tampa and Lenoir-Vine. This is a top three game of the weekend at worst, regardless of division. This is one of the best games of the weekend. Tampa's been hotter than a $2 pistol. They haven't lost since February 17th. Canyon Birch, their transfer from Penn State a couple years ago, is over 60 goals this year. Andrew Milani is a first-team All-American. He runs their offense. The defense has Matt Beto, who I think I maintain could start for anyone in America, regardless of division, at long stick midfield. He's that good. Tampa's got five players with over 25 goals. They are an onslaught of an offense. It feels, I think they played Lewis in the quarterfinals, and I think they won 20-6 or something like that. It feels like they should be the favorite here, except that one loss that they have, the last one. They lost one game this year. It was that one way back on February 17th. Came at the hands of Lenoir-Vine. One goal game. Actually, it might not have been a one goal game. But that one loss that Tampa has is to Lenoir-Vine. Lenoir-Vine's only loss this year is a one goal defeat to Limestone that they avenged in the first round of the playoffs. They lost multitudes to graduation, and they just have not missed a beat. I think Rob Pensabene in net has been outstanding. The defense in front of him is led by Victor Powell, who is every bit of first team All American. The defense for LRU is fun to watch. If you like the bully throwback, you know, it looks like their defensive game plan is you can't score if you're on the ground in pain. Then you can't score. That's the kind of defense they play. On offense, they don't really have a superstar. Evan Voss is leading the team in points. This squad has 12 guys in double-digit points, 11 guys with double-digit goals. It is true production by committee. It makes them brutal to match up against. And you're cutting the heads off Hydras. You cut off one goal scorer, two more are coming out of that sub box in his place. I honestly don't know who would be the favorite here. Maybe narrowly Tampa. I think I'm going to be on Tampa in this game. They feel like a team. The way they've been playing lately is just building themselves towards championship weekend. Last year, for a long stretch in D2, they looked like and were basically the best team in the country. They were rolling through people, and then kind of just people had their number at the end, and they couldn't make it to the title game. It feels like a flip the script kind of approach for them this year. I think they're out for blood. So I'm going to take Tampa to make it to championship weekend, setting up a battle between Adelphi and Tampa for the D2 championship in Philadelphia. Just talking about this has me so fired up. I can't wait to go to Philly Memorial Day weekend. I cannot wait. It's going to be great. Those are all the games this weekend, man. That's a lot of lacrosse. It is not just the four D1 games that you should be thinking about here. That's a lot of games. You got NLL finals. The cup could be handed out this weekend. You got D3, Elite Eight, that's full of incredible stories and unbelievable teams and talent, including pros. You got D2 playing for a spot in championship weekend. God, it's fun. But that's going to be it for today. I do appreciate you being here. One thing I will say as we wrap up here, I do believe May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and I know that it's sports, and sometimes it's you know, the expectation is to be the tough guy and keep things inside. If you are somebody who is struggling mentally or facing some issues that are hard for you, do not feel like you have to do it by yourself. There are people out there who love you and want to help you, and you don't have to go through stuff alone. It is Mental Health Awareness Month. Take care of yours. Take care of those around you. Check in on the people you love. Thank you again for coming back to Sticks In. We'll see you next time.